You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. I got a question for you. You know that even the most competitive companies only close about 15% of the deals in their sales pipelines, and that means that salespeople spend time with prospects who 85% of the time aren't going to buy. Now, I'm asking salespeople and sales managers and business owners, wouldn't you rather spend more time pursuing prospects you knew you could close or spend time with prospects where it matters most at an executive level? Well, if you're ready for exceptional results for yourself or your company, this is going to be a great program for you. We have, as interviewing today, Jeff Kozer, the founder and author of Selling the Zebras. And Jeff is going to tell us a whole way of going about attracting, finding, qualifying, and closing business. So, welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Will. Thank you. How are you?
Well, wonderful. We're having a beautiful day here in Southern California. How about you?
We are too. It's a little bit crisp here in northern Wisconsin, which you'd expect this time of year, but the sun is out and we're appreciative.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, I know that Brian and JR had to take off for a while to go up and do their share of harvesting those muskies and walleyes up in northern Wisconsin last week, right?
That's correct. They did. That's their annual pilgrimage up there.
Well, somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah, so it was unseasonably warm up there for the weeks leading up to their annual trek up there, and so the muskies weren't biting, but the walleye did, and at least they were well fed.
Yeah, that's wonderful. In your time in looking at sales in this country, what have you discovered?
So that's a really good question. So you know, sales is changed. The people who, it used to be that you could, activity management would get you enough business. So meaning, if you did enough activity, even if you weren't all that good at it, you would close enough business. You could survive. And that's completely changed today, as you know, Will. I mean, literally, if you are an activity management company that, or focused and philosophy company, you can do 100 phone calls today. That might generate X number of appointments, and that might generate X number of proposals. And in the old days, that might lead to 3 deals or whatever it did. But today, it can lead to nothing. So you have to change. Something has to change. Because the old style of pursuing everyone with equal vigor is not producing the same amount of results that companies have come to become used to.
Well, and you could say a similar thing about marketing in general, given the new marketplace with digital marketing, this plethora of apps, and there's still a marketplace for people to sell those services to the sales organizations.
Yeah, what I always ask people like yourself, though, is if you look at your email before you go home today, and knowing that the email that you didn't ask for, that you aren't aware of who even sent it, knowing that that's reading that is what's standing in the way of you getting home on time and spending time with loved ones or doing something you'd want to do, what are you going to do? And the answer is fairly easy, and you just delete those.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, I'm on a focusing jaunt right now, and so I'm focusing my life in 2 or 3 very specific ways, apart from my family and my wonderful wife. In terms of business and contributions, I'm focusing on only 2 or 3 things, and that means I'm literally going through an unrolling from lots of emails and email newsletters and just so much stuff that's just like shiny objects out there. And, you know, that's clarifying for me a whole lot of things, but it doesn't mean that I don't have problems that I want to solve or things that I want to buy in order to attempt to solve those problems, but it's not going to come through a barrage of information.
You know, I think that's a statement made by someone that is very clear about the goals and looking for a way to actually achieve them and changing something that might have been in the way of actually allowing you to achieve them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I look at my library of books. I happen to read a lot of books. And I look at my library and I realize there's a lot of attractive things that I want to, you know, that appeal to me, and maybe it's a project I didn't finish, and so I want to hang on to it. But in terms of being able to accomplish what my real goals are, there's got to be a real discipline of being able to focus on those things and not get distracted by tons of other things. And it seems to me that so much of our digital marketing marketplace and our sales systems are specifically trying to hold these shiny objects out to me and trying to attract my attention.
You know, the automation sometimes is really just going faster and being more efficient at something that isn't working.
Right. Well, that's not working, so let's do it three times faster. Do a lot more of it.
Right.
It wasn't that was the if we're not making a profit, we'll just do more and make it up in volume, right?
That is the old saying.
I wonder if that fits for frustrated salespeople and marketers. If we're not getting business by sending out 3,000 emails, let's try sending out 15,000.
Yeah, so that's literally what happens when you have leadership that is driven by an activity-based model that we were talking about before. That is the type of thinking that exists. That's the type of culture. And when we find that. So as you know, Will, you know, you're a student of our book. In Selling to Zebras, one of the things we talk about is figuring out where you fit exceptionally well and staying there only.
Mm-hmm.
And part of our anti-zebra, if you will, is a company that has an activity-based philosophy. And what happens is usually it's a founder or a CEO or it's a sales leader that kind of grew up when activity management was useful and productive, and they haven't changed. But we don't try to change the thinking, because it's almost like religion and politics with your brother-in-law. It's kind of a waste of time to try to change anybody's opinion. So if you're smart, you don't go there. And that's what we do with those types of opportunities is those aren't our zebras, and we move on.
Mm-hmm. 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 And so now there was a time when behavior-based selling metrics worked, right?
Yes, there absolutely was.
And now, what is it? Is it that there are more salespeople? There are more opportunities? We can do it faster because of digital automation. What do you think has changed?
So I think there's several things that have changed. One is the web, so the proliferation of information, and all of our desire to put our information out there and make it accessible to prospects. We hope they'll find us, and as a result, they're doing more of that before they ever engage with us. You know, IDC, they were the first to do the research and say that 57%, their famous study says that 57% of the sale actually is completed before they ever contact a supplier or an option to buy to solve a problem. And there's some that are saying Marketing Sherpa is now saying, you know, something even higher than that. But the percentages don't really matter. What it really boils down to is that buyers are better informed. They want to be better informed before they engage with you, and they only want to spend time when they're convinced that they have a business issue that's worth solving, and they have done some of the homework to determine who they're willing to engage with. So if you're not on that list, your approach has to be different than it ever was before, because that prospect knows more than they ever did before.
Well, are we Are we then looking for those companies who have already decided they have a problem and agreed that they want to solve it, and they've already done some preliminary research? Is that what we're trying to find?
So I would say yes and no. So that's sort of an intercept mentality, right, from the old days.
Yes.
And find somebody that already acknowledges they have the business problem you solve, and they're actively looking for a solution. So the answer, if you know where you bring unique value, and if you know where you fit particularly well, i.e. you've identified them as your zebra, then I would definitely jump in on those, even if they're late sales cycle deals. But most companies, to achieve their growth and profitability objectives, have to sell to prospects who don't already know that they have the problem that you solve and don't necessarily know the value that would be created by solving it. So you have to have an ability to address both.
So the intercept model is go out and find the Easter egg amongst the stones, right?
That's right.
All right. And I, you know, I've certainly taught that to many people. Get rid of the stones as quickly as possible. Disqualify, and wind up with those Easter eggs who are people who have a problem and they want to solve it. Now, what I'm hearing is that there's also a way to target, to pick out a group of companies that could be better if they allowed us to work with them. Is that right?
There's no question. In fact, you know, one of the things that I do is I speak to groups of CEOs, and it's a lot of fun. You know, to break the ice, what I'll often do is I have a pad of paper, you know, that the cube type, the 3x3-inch cube type that sits on your desk, and it's got some type of printing on the side of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know the type I'm
yes.
talking about. So mine has zebra print on the side, as you would expect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take one of these little 3-inch by 3-inch sheets, and I'll pass it around the room and ask each CEO to take that little sheet of paper, and it's small on purpose, and I'll ask them to write out the business problem that they solve for their customer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really interesting exercise, because when you then ask for their feedback, invariably every one of them will start describing their business.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll start describing their product.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't communicate it in terms that are important to their customers. So they don't talk about truly the business problem that you solve for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's enlightening for them to hear the difference. And then we share the answer to the question that you just asked, which is, so what is it that we do? Well, we actually help companies identify, close, expand, and retain zebras.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. And most companies have a problem. How do you find more of your best customers? And by best customer, the definition is actually based on math. If it's a large enough company, the Pareto principle applies. And you might be amazed. Everybody knows the Pareto principle is simply the 80-20 rule.
Right, right.
Right. So we all believe in that in sales.
Mm-hmm.
But if you increase that number by 5% and you turn that into a quadrant, 25% of your customers statistically will make up 89% of your revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So that 25% is 89% of all the revenue. And the other interesting thing, and potentially more intriguing, is that it represents 150% of your profit. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So in other words, all the others are loss leaders pulling down your margin as you either accurately or inaccurately anticipate that you can grow them into something different than they are today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what the zebra process does is it helps you find more of those 25 percenters. That's in essence in in a nutshell, in a simple statement,
mm-hmm.
what it does?
Well, you know, one of the things that is part of Sandler training, when I would say a naive person comes into training, and by naive, I'm not talking about, you know, not being stupid, but unreflective. I mean, they have learned selling, and they actually believe that their job going into a sales call is to make a sale, to come out with a purchase order, a credit card, or an agreement to buy.
Yeah.
And what I tell them, and it takes a little while for them to really understand it and live it out, is that you don't. That's not what you sell. You're not selling a product. You're selling a solution, and that's a huge step for people to take when they begin to understand. I'm not here to talk about my product. I'm here to find out about what your problems are, then to find out if you want to solve them, and then to find out if I, in fact, can help you. Now, what I'm hearing from you is that the next step is actually understanding what I offer in terms of problem solving, and be able to present that rather than my product, but the solved problem to a prospective, to a prospect. Is that fair?
Fair, and I take it a step further. What they expect you to do is do your homework. So do research on them, so that you are pretty darn sure they have the business issue you solve, because you know your zebras so well, you know. So you can't go in today and say what keeps you up at night. What you have to do is you have to go in and say, I know what should be keeping you up at night. And there's a huge difference there,
mm-hmm.
right? So the reason I know that is because I focus really well. And, you know, I've talked with my customers, and we've done the voice of the customer work, which is, you know, Will, is also a key part of our process. You know, we gained insights from their perspective on the business problem we solve and the value that we create by solving it. And you're really well aligned with customers where I've done business, and here's three examples. And by doing my homework, I found that you also have similar issues. Now, the issue or the question for me is, are you the right person that owns this, and is there urgency? If I could solve it and I could create approximately this much value, which is what we also prescribe, you come in with a calculation of a preliminary business case, and you've now positioned everything power needs to decide should they engage with you and allow you to, basically you're asking for permission to work with the people they trust to verify that business case. So the decision really is, will they allow you to disrupt their business? Because you might think there's no cost to this, but there is. The cost is the disruption to the business. And the step is to verify that business case. So now what you've demonstrated to that individual is you're a business person. You've done your homework. You've found someone that has the business issue that you solve. You presented it to them, and you've quantified it. And now what's going to happen is either they're going to sponsor you to verify it, or they're going to give you pretty good insight as to why it's not a priority and why the timing just isn't right. But either way, you're going to walk out of there with the information that you need. The information to either engage, or the information to put it on the back burner, or the information to decide that they, in fact, never were a zebra.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've used this word zebra, and you and I have spoken enough to understand what zebras are. Talk a little bit about what is the definition of a zebra.
So we've probably teased your audience quite a bit by throwing that term flippantly around and not defining it, haven't we?
Right.
So a zebra is your perfect prospect, and the perfect prospect based on 7 identifiable characteristics. It's the types of companies where you do well, it's the demographics, it's the cultural alignment, it's operations, what business issues do you solve, so that's the second attribute is operations, and who do you solve them for, and what value do you bring when you solve them? And these are in strategic order. by the way. The third is power. Who's power for your decision? Notice it's not a title. We're not saying it's C-level. We're not saying it's a VP. We're not even saying it's director level. We're saying power. And power, by definition, is the person that can buy your solution, even without a budget, as long as you verify that the business case is achievable and they agree with that. So fourth is funding. What's the level of funding that's required for you to be successful and for them to achieve the value? Fifth is ROI / value / total cost of ownership. So that's where you actually build that business case and you can prove you can achieve it. Sixth is technology. And somebody might say, you know, wait a minute, I'm not a technology company, I'm not high tech, I'm not computers, I'm not software, but technology plays a role in virtually all deals today. Even non-technology oriented deals, there's technology involved. So there's that element. And then sixth is service. And service is the level of service that's required for you to achieve that business case value that someone would pay for. So it's not just, do I provide good service or how do I stack up with the competition, but do you provide the level of service that ensures that they're going to achieve that business case and actually make good on the promises that they will make to their organization as they decide to buy from you. So that's how you define a zebra, and then you measure each one of these attributes. You score it, it's a red, yellow, green system. You score it from 0 to 4, 0 and 1 are red, 2 is yellow, 3 and 4 are green. So you can see each attribute turn from red to yellow to green, and then the total score totals up into a score that stays red, yellow, or green also. And it gives you tremendous visibility and insight into the deals that you're pursuing, where the holes are in those deals, and it gives you a framework for having a discussion, not just within your sales organization, but also cross-functionally and most appropriately in a go-to-market fashion across the organization, so that literally everybody on the management team understands the customer you serve, the problem you solve, the value that you create by solving it, and who and why you're pursuing the deals that you're pursuing.
This is a very sophisticated way of going to market, so this probably doesn't work for selling bubblegum.
No, it's a business-to-business solution. It's generally not business-to-consumer, so not B2C. And it's more for companies that have a complex, what's called a complex sale, where there's generally many resources from their company involved in bringing a deal together and delivering on it. And there's also potentially multiple decision makers on the prospect side with several, potentially even several levels of SMEs, subject matter experts, involved in the decision in addition to power.
Well, so what has been your experience? How does a company know that this would be valuable to them? What can you describe a company that would find the selling the zebras process an aha moment?
Yeah, so what we look for, our zebra, if you will,
mm-hmm.
is an organization where the management team, the CEO, the board, or even cross-functionally, they realize that they would benefit from shifting from a feature function sales approach to selling based on value. So moving from a product-centric approach to one that is centered around the prospect and the value that they create for that prospect based on what their customers have said is the value they created for them. So that's part of what we look for. We also look for a company that doesn't believe that a CRM alone is the answer to all of this. Either they have one and they now know the truth that it was useful, but it really didn't help sellers sell, or they're maybe disenchanted with their CRM and they want to replace it. so or just enhance it. So that's part of what we look for in an organization. And then operationally, what we look for, where this fits particularly well, is when they're not necessarily very good at closing large deals. They're unable to prioritize the opportunities that they have in the pipeline. They're not able to accurately predict what their forecast is going to be. And one of the symptoms of that is that the closer you get to the end of the quarter, the faster deals shrink from the pipeline. That's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have tools for their account managers, if they have salespeople that are stratified by hunters versus farmers, so if the farmers, or what we sometimes call account managers, if those guys lack tools to retain existing customers and expand those customers, those are particularly good prospects for us. And also if sales, business development, and marketing are just not aligned, because this really aligns the, not just those three organizations, but actually cross-functionally it aligns the people that deliver on the solution, even R&D, and certainly the executive management team.
All right. Here's what I'd like to do. We're going to take a little break here, Jeff, okay. And then I want to come back, and I want to talk about how the selling to zebras can help appropriate businesses in Orange County thrive, and what we can do to help them dramatically increase the value that they're bringing to their customers. So stick around, will you?
I will.
We'll be right back.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections. Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions, and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
And now back to Will and his guest.
Well, we have been talking with Jeff Kozer about selling the zebras and getting very specific about the value that selling the zebras can bring to companies, especially in the B2B market. Now, Jeff, what I'd like to do is begin to focus a little bit on how you and I might bring the value of selling the zebras to companies in Orange County, and in doing that, how we might increase their own value as well as increase the value that they bring to their customers.
Sounds like an intriguing question. I'd love to answer that one, Will.
All right. Well, let's talk about it.
Okay. So the real secret sauce to this, so we talked about the zebra, and that's really where the organization identifies where you believe you bring exceptional value, the problems you solve, etc. But then what you do is you verify it, and you verify it with your customers. And it's through a voice of the customer exercise. And we actually have a separate ebook from our Selling to Zebras book on our website. It's free. It talks about how you do this. And we and our partners do this as well, because it's actually something that is easy to talk about but not so easy to do. So the first challenge with doing it is actually finding who power is even within your existing customer base. And here's the interesting dilemma and why it exists. Companies don't generally have a relationship with power even within their own customers. This happens for a couple of reasons. One, a lot of times they might have sold where they never met power to begin with, and that can be where power originally felt there was a problem that needed solving, so he or she put together a team They went out and found a solution. They made a recommendation. Power approved it, and they bought. And you don't even know who it is, and you never met them. The other scenario, which is pretty prevalent, is where you do have a relationship with power during the sales cycle, but after they buy, the day-to-day dealings with your solution and your organization settles in a couple levels below. You lose that connection with power. Power might turn over, so maybe you've still, once again, you've never met them. So the first challenge is figuring out who that is. And then you have to earn the right to have a conversation with them, even when they're your customer. So we have a process for doing that. But once you have the attention of power and you've earned that right, the questions that you're going to ask are different than a normal case study questioner might ask. It's really about, from their vantage point, in their eyes, what problem did you solve? And what value was created for the organization? Now, you might say, Jeff, how profound can this be? Don't we really know the answer to those questions? And I'll tell you, from the exercise, if you do 8 to 10 of these within your customer base, and you do it with accounts you believe are zebras, so you've gone through, you've created your zebra, you will always get enlightened, and it's exciting, a light enlightenment. I'll tell you an example. So one of our customers, where we did this voice of the customer work, and a partner of ours that we taught how to do this, worked with us on this, is called a company called Serigraph. Serigraph is about a $80 million manufacturer. They make highly engineered parts. They're mostly plastic parts, printed parts. They print on those plastic parts. They're pretty exact. So, for example, they make automotive parts. They make parts for the appliance industry. A lot of times these are visible parts, like the dashboard insert, for example, that shows the speedometer and the lights, etc. They make those. And they have to be quite refined and work every time. We're talking parts per million accuracy here. Automotive world, or the appliance world, a little less exacting, but very cost conscious. So when we first started working with Serigraph, they told us that the reasons customers buy is they solve printing and plastics related problems, engineer to order problems, the toughest things for a client to get right. That's who that goes to Serigraph, and they really were talking a lot about their product, kind of like Will, you and I talked about on the front end. You know, it was a very product centric conversation. And when we talked with their customers, one of them was Honda, for example, Honda ATV, so the four-wheel all-terrain vehicles. When we talked to Honda and said, what problem does Serigraph solve for you? They didn't go down the path of saying they make our hard-to-engineer parts. They didn't go down the path of saying they're good problem solvers, although they eventually did. The number one reason they said they bought was because Serigraph was so reliable organizationally, not just with their individual products, but organizationally, that they never disrupted the supply chain and never brought their manufacturing facility to a halt. So I thought, that must be a business issue with Honda. And I said, so how big a problem is that? What, you know, you're only dealing with very good suppliers, some of the best in the world. They're all tier one suppliers. So how often does that happen? He said it happens on average 2.5 times per year per supplier. What's the opportunity cost of that disruption within your network? They said the average cost in their network of that disruption is $250,000. So think about that. That's a competitive differentiation for Serigraph of 2.5 times $250,000. That's the cost avoidance associated with working with Serigraph versus with the competition. That's $625,000 a year. And it's a business problem that they solve that they weren't even aware of. And there's insights like that that come out of the voice of the customer work every single time. And relating this back to your Orange County and surrounding area customers, Will, or prospects that, that could benefit, if you have those types of insights from your customer and you approach new prospects with messaging like that, you're changing the conversation, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. Moving from what we thought was the problem we were solving to an additional insight into the problem that the customer believes we are solving. And the customer may not tell us that.
Exactly. So you have to be skillful at extracting that, and you have to be skillful at figuring out what value is created by solving that problem. And again, we talk about that in the Voice of the Customer ebook. Sometimes you got to go back to the customer a second time, but you ask for permission to do that. And your conversation with power is refreshingly different than what they're used to also, which helps to earn the relationship and earn the path back there again. And we often talk with our customers a couple of times, potentially even send them an email and say, look, we know we didn't arrive at the value of solving this when we were first talking, but we did some investigation and we think it looks like this. How does this feel to you? We wrote it up this way. And sometimes they'll even come back and they'll even edit your email for you. So now you've truly captured the essence of what you would both agree is possible with your customer solution.
All right. So how do we go to market in Orange County selling the Zebras program? How would we approach companies in Orange County with who could be Zebras for the selling the Zebras?
So if an organization has sales or margins that are plateaued or are disappointing, or if just the trajectory that they're on is not satisfactory, this is a solution that allows you to sell Zebras, which are by very definition those that contribute literally all of the profit to your organization. It allows you to identify them, it allows you to sell them, it allows you to retain them, and it allows you to expand them. Those are the organizations that are our targets. And if they recognize that's a business issue, our whole philosophy, Will, is that we shouldn't approach anyone that doesn't acknowledge the business problem we solve and doesn't say that it would be a priority for resolution. And if they say both of those things affirmatively, then we position the amount of value we can create for solving them. And we know exactly what that is. We know that we affect, let me back up. So I've built businesses doing this, and I've helped hundreds of businesses since started selling to Zebras and thousands of sellers. And we sell the way we teach others to sell. So it's metrics-based. So we know we affect three things. The three things are average deal size, it's pipeline close rate, and speed of the sales cycle. So average deal size goes up minimally 13%. That's the absolute low end. Pipeline close rate, the minimum we've ever done, is 102% improvement. So a doubling of the pipeline close rate. And reduction in sales cycle length, the least ever accomplished, is 21%. So those are our baseline metrics. Now somebody might say, how can you make those claims? Well, we know it takes some time to do this, so we sell it as a program. You know, you have to commit to this, and the process will get you there minimally. So that's what we're looking for, is organizations where they want some of this. They want these types of metrics, and they're willing to commit to pursue and go get it together.
All right. Now, if we were following the selling to Zebras process, we would identify companies that we believed had sales or margins that are plateaued, that would have a problem with their average deal size, a problem with their close rate, and a problem with the speed of the sales cycle. Then we would do research on the companies, put together a value plan, and approach power. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
All right. Now, I have that list of companies that I believe have those problems. I suppose the next step would be to do some research.
It is. Because as we talked about before, power wants you to show up knowing what should be keeping them up at night. And then if you're a little bit off, they'll correct you because you've approached them with a different type of conversation than they're used to. So if some of your information is not 100% accurate because you don't live their business, they'll set you straight. And again, it becomes a much deeper conversation right from the very first meeting.
All right, so now would the research that we do on these target companies have to do with coming up with what their average deal size is, or are we looking for indications that they're frustrated with their current average deal size?
So you won't find data on any of these three metrics typically, but what you will find is if they're, when you're in Orange County, it's a small community, as most communities are across America. And the local newspapers report generally on the success of a company, and generally it's an organization that's had some success, so they've been in the newspaper, and then suddenly something happens. Maybe the world isn't quite as bright or quite as prolific in terms of their success that it had been before. And those are some of the nuggets that you're looking to find that might indicate that this could be top of mind and could be an issue. And you might, we teach clients how to find these nuggets. So it's not just Google-based searches, but it is Google-based, but it's also looking at their website. It's also looking at presentations that they've made at conferences, and we teach techniques for finding those. So they generally talk about the business issues they're facing at conferences, and they talk about what they're doing about those. So there's nuggets there that you can use that show that you've tried to earn the right. You know, you've learned about their business, you believe that they have a need, and then you quantify it. So then what you do is you put a stake in the ground when you build a preliminary business case. And what we do, Will, is we go to the low end of what we've accomplished. So average deal size, again, the least ever accomplished is 13%. So we will make a claim that we can increase your deal size by 13%. And we have a model. It's a software model that our clients use. It's all cloud-based. It automatically produces this for you by just getting just a couple of pieces of information. So it does the heavy lifting for you, and it gives you the ability to penetrate them with a well-thought-out message and business case, which increases the strength of the penetration message that you're going to use to have that initial conversation and the subsequent meeting.
Well, so I'm thinking right now that if over the next 2 years we were to successfully implement selling the Zebras in 30 companies in Orange County, mm-hmm. and we were only to meet the baseline metrics that you have, the conservative numbers, that would be a significant contribution to the available resources, revenue in terms of companies in Orange County.
It would be impactful, and it would have an impact on the local economy.
Yes, and because my belief is that the strongest lever in terms of improving the quality of life in any community is the business community.
I like that thinking.
And if in fact we can impact the business success. Now I'm not talking about, you know, within the constraints of morality and good feelings and all the right things, but if we can in fact impact businesses and assist them in increasing their average deal size by at least 13%, the pipeline close rate by at least 110%, and reduce the sales cycle by 21% in 30 companies. The value that brings to the entire society in Orange County is very significant.
And imagine this. Imagine if the county gains a reputation that sellers only call on prospects where they've identified they have the problem that they solve, where they can bring unique value, and they don't waste anybody else's time. Wouldn't the world be a better place, not just Orange County, wouldn't the world be a better place if everybody sold that way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
that's my goal.
Well, let me add a focused part of your goal to Orange County, because my goal becomes assisting 30 companies in the next 2 years in implementing Selling to Zebras, along with Sandler Training to help them even further improve their selling process.
The combination is very powerful, as you know.
Yes, yes. And so what I think we have before us is I have a list here of the first 15 that we can take a look at. And at the top of the list is a company that got out of the mobile printing business, a very successful company, but saw that mobile printing was not going to be that lucrative, moved into the Internet of Things, and now the CEO is very dedicated to improving the sales process for this particular niche. So I think that's the one we're going to do research and start on.
Interesting. You know, I did Voice of the Customer work with Time Incorporated, and they went through a similar transformation and have digitized their assets and are growing faster than the other, their constituency. So we've worked with clients who have transitioned very similar to the company that you just described.
Jeff, this has been wonderful. A great conversation. And my producer here is sitting here saying we have just enjoyed each other and presented a great information for companies in Orange County. And so we're going to sign off right now, but this is only the first in many conversations that we'll be having over the next couple of years.
Hey, I enjoyed it, Will.
Well, thank you very much. And this is the Pilgrim on the 405, asking everybody out there to focus and pay attention to how we can help businesses thrive in Southern California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.